Welcome to Decaf and Debunk, a podcast all about busting myths and bringing light to popular and sometimes confusing topics in nutrition and health, because we all could use a little less caffeine and a little more science.
I'm Hope.
And I'm Jessie.
And we're both dietitians with our doctorates in nutrition who have a passion for making nutrition and health information accessible and approachable. So today is our first recording our first podcast episode. We're very excited to be here with you all. And we really hope that this grows into a community where we can learn from each other. And to kind of help with that, I think we're going to start by sharing a little bit about ourselves and our backgrounds. Jessie, do you want to start?
Sure. So kind of redundant here, but I'm Jessie. So I have a PhD in nutritional sciences. I'm also a registered dietitian, and I have over 10 years of experience in the realms of nutrition and gut health. So a lot of my training during my PhD and master's career and my dietetics career is in the realm of like GI health and concerns. I work a lot one-on-one with individuals that have IBS. Fellow member of the IBS club, if that applies to you, I can sympathize with those struggles. I am also a professor and researcher, and as you'll get through this podcast, I'm incredibly socially awkward and have high amounts of social anxiety, which seems counterintuitive as I got into a field that requires me to get in front of large groups of students for a living, and also somehow decided to put myself in situations where I have to show up on social media all the time. But I enjoy it, but that's where the social awkwardness comes from. So that's a little bit about me. Hope.
I too am pretty socially awkward, which is okay. I also have my PhD in nutrition science from NC State University. My area of expertise, though, is pretty different. I work with maternal and child nutrition. I'm a lactation consultant as well as a registered dietitian. And I just really love teaching, I think, even though that does get me in front of large groups similar to you. I really love the like aha moment when someone gets something. So
it's the best, is it not? It's so good.
Yeah, it is. That's my favorite moment. And that's why I got into teaching, being a professor, being a researcher, because it's a lot of time and energy, but you get the exciting moment at the end where someone just clicks and they're like, okay, this really works for me, or I'm doing it. So that's a little bit about me.
And so kind of along those lines, talking about why you got into teaching and why you really enjoy that, what, I guess you could share a little bit about kind of for both of us, what got us into starting this podcast and kind of venturing down that realm.
Yeah. So Jessie and I have spent many an hour at random coffee shops or public places venting about the quality of some of the health information that floats around, especially kind of the annoyance that comes with being a dietitian, even the like comments, at least from my end, that I get from family as soon as they find out I'm a registered dietitian about, oh, can you tell me how to do X? So I think that for me, and I think I do speak for Jessie as well, but I think we really love helping to, well, we named the podcast this. We helping to debunk myths that come with nutrition, right? Because it can be hard to understand. Things change a lot in our field. New research comes out, but those things can be hard for the average person to understand. And just like when we work with clients or students or anyone, I think that it's helpful when someone really truly understands how to apply something in their life. So having something be a little bit more digestible, a little bit more approachable, anything you want to add? I mean, that's from my perspective, kind of how we ended up.
I mean, kind of the same thing. So I have a little bit of a background of, I got into sharing just random science facts and stuff that I was learning on social media during my PhD. And I've kind of continued to do so from there. And that was really just out of kind of like a frustration at just the mass amounts of misinformation that were online. And like Hope said, like family members asking you all of these random questions and just seeing how dangerous some of that misinformation is. And really, I really enjoy kind of debunking it and helping bring it to light. And one thing that I've tried to grow in over the past few years is, my husband calls me on this because he also has a PhD in nutrition too. So our home conversations are quite interesting, if you can imagine. But he was like, you always, like, this was during my PhD. He was like, you always like debunk things. Do you like anything? And so I've had to, as I like move into like working with clients and stuff, make sure that I'm not only like telling them that things are just like, no, don't follow that, don't do that. I'm giving them options of things to do instead. So that's how you grow as a practitioner and researcher and educator all in one. He gets on me pretty hard sometimes, which is fun. But yeah, it really, my interest in starting this and just showing up online in general is just to help kind of demystify, debunk some of the most common information out there and give people practical solutions on what's going to give them the biggest bang for their buck when it comes to nutrition and health. One thing I end up saying a lot of times is some of the most simple things that you can do for, in terms of nutrition and in my realm, like gut health, have some of the biggest impact. And I think a lot of people like jump over some of the basic things and jump to like taking all these crazy supplements, trying to improve their health. When in reality, if you just got back to the basics of, are you drinking enough water? Are you eating on a regular basis? Are we consuming enough fiber? Are we getting enough sleep? Are we getting movement in? If they covered some of those, they would see some of the biggest benefits. So a little bit of a tangent there, but that's
I totally agree with that, because I think that part of the reason that this field in general can be difficult to just understand what's going on is because it seems so complicated. So bringing back to the basics of, you know, just taking care of yourself, learning how to listen to your body. So many people that are like wanting the quick fix, and that leads them so far astray from just the basics of how to take care of themselves. So yeah. And I also definitely think that, you know, marketing plays a heavy part in a lot of that, because they end up seeing something that's promised to be the easy way. Not saying that it's not easy when you do it these other ways, but I think what you're saying is totally relatable, that you have to bring it back to, what do we need to do to simply take care of our body rather than making everything so complex and difficult to approach?
Yeah. And I feel like Hope and I can appreciate that we like to simplify nutrition as much as possible, but we fully do also have an appreciation for the complexity of nutrition. We both teach all of the biochem classes in our respective positions. And so if you love biochem and organic chemistry and all of those kind of things, we love that too. We find that super interesting. But from a practical perspective, nutrition is very simple when it comes down to like what you need to do as an individual basis. Within our bodies, it's very complex, but from an individual perspective, it's the simple things are what you need to focus on most of the time.
Yeah. And just like other fields, I think one thing that's a pet peeve of mine is that with the field of nutrition, it's almost like the tables got turned to that the individual needs to know all of these things and how to do them. And really, we have an entire field of individuals that are trained to, I leave that to me to understand the nerdy, like how glucose goes through your body and why you feel tired when you're not eating enough carb. Leave that to me, because that's what we spent so many years studying. And that shift to putting the responsibility on the consumer, because of the way that the media is kind of shifted how it communicates nutrition information, I think also leads to a lot of guilt around like, well, I guess I'm not doing it right. I must be misunderstanding something. And in literally every other field of healthcare, you wouldn't like break your leg and then be like, oh, it's not healing. I must not be doing something right. We would go, you know, to whatever kind of doctor looks at orthopedic, you know, x-rays, whoever does x-rays, and learn from them, like, okay, what do I need to do? They would probably send us to a physical therapist. It wouldn't be on me that I don't, that I'm failing because my ankle's not healing. And I feel like somehow in nutrition, we've totally shifted to the consumer. It's all on the consumer. Mm-hmm. If you're struggling, it's because you're not understanding or you're not doing something right, or you're not applying this simple trick appropriately. And that is an awful feeling when you're like navigating your day-to-day life. Something as simple as feeding yourself now feels overwhelming.
I was actually talking to a client about this kind of same thing a few days ago, just with working with individuals that have IBS. We really have to get at the nitty gritty of like figuring out what foods are causing what symptoms. And that can be really mentally taxing for a lot of individuals, especially individuals that are more like health anxious too. And so what I like to say, and I said to this client, or, and what I say to a lot of different clients that I work with, is like, let me take the burden on of looking at what foods I feel like are reacting with you. Like, let me take the burden on researching the information that I think is going to be most applicable to you. Because as someone that also has like deals with like health anxiety and can quickly spiral down rabbit holes, like the information that is at our fingertips is wonderful in that we can get access to so much information very quickly, but it's also incredibly dangerous because you've seen the reels, the TikToks of people like Googling one specific symptom and it's like, you have cancer. And I mean, you can very quickly spiral down those rabbit holes. And so that's why I think it's having that information is nice, but it's really important to like leave that. This is not even in nutrition, but leave some of that to the experts that are trained to do that, because it's putting a lot of mental burden on yourself to claim to like wade through all of this information that you may not even be trained to really evaluate. And it can lead to you making some like really drastic decisions about your health and changing different things that maybe you don't even need to change. And then stress itself is a big factor in influencing people's health. And if you're like unnecessarily stressing about a lot of this stuff, that can add to, I mean, worsening health conditions if they're even present.
And that even goes for things that are not necessarily a dangerous health condition, right? I support a lot of parents with breastfeeding, and just bringing in someone who is taking the burden off of figuring out if your baby's getting enough food, figuring out how you're doing, that in and of itself can totally change this, the way a situation is going. So yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think that the amount of health anxiety that can come from trying to go down the rabbit holes when, you know, even if you are in another field that you are trained to read and evaluate research, because there's lots of other professionals that are, and you can apply that in nutrition, it's still, you don't have all of the background information to go into evaluating a study that's in a field that's not your own, and contextualize it in the actual human body, what the other known effects are of different things, because all of the studies are, you know, in one population, one group, very controlled, obviously, hopefully, if they're doing a good job. So being able to contextualize that in a clinical setting, I think is important, because we end up with a lot of, you know, clickbait type of articles that are scary. The title sounds scary. Like this one thing that you need to do, or this one thing that is causing all of your problems. And they might even have the citation at the bottom. And if you read that, it might even sound a little bit like, oh, wow, this study did find that. But if you don't have a background of all of the other studies that have been done, how the field is evolving on that topic, it can be very overwhelming to know what to believe and what not to believe.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we've given a little bit of a background about how we approach nutrition and working with clients, and working with like broad populations and how we provide education. But we kind of wanted to talk a little bit about how we approach nutrition in our day-to-day life. So Hope, do you want to share a little bit about like what's your kind of philosophy on nutrition, and how do you approach it in like feeding yourself and feeding your loved ones?
So That is a complicated question for me, but I will do my best to succinctly describe it. I swam for 18 years competitively all the way through college. And when I tell you nobody talked to me about nutrition, I mean like zippo. Like when I got to the other side and realized that there were people that help athletes, I was like, how did I spend 18 years in a competitive sport and never once did anyone bring this up? Or, you know, maybe they did, but it wasn't in a structured enough environment that I was forced to pay attention. And so when I graduated college, I like took a hard left and became probably too obsessive over like, whoa, learning about these things and tracking things and, you know, following the fad diets. I think that's why I have such a bone to pick with fad diets, because honestly, I think my body was healthier when I didn't overthink what I ate. I didn't eat a perfect diet. Maybe there are some things I could have changed that would have improved my performance. I'm sure there are things I could have changed that would have improved my performance, but I wasn't overthinking it. I was able to listen to my body cues, and I came out the other side of this whole entire rabbit hole that I went down, which was honestly like years of a rabbit hole, to realize I don't even know how to tell when I'm hungry. Like Jesse knows this about me. I have alarms set on my phone to remind me to go get lunch. You know, if I'm distracted of something, there could be other factors that are impacting whether I'm distracted or not. But I really do sometimes have to remind myself, okay, you need to stop, you need to feed yourself. And I lost that somewhere along the way. So now in my life, I try really hard to learn to listen to my body a little bit more, honor that there's going to be days that I can't get it together and don't feel like cooking. I have a husband and 3 stepkids. So some, you know, on the weeks that we have the kids, which is every other week, I obviously cook dinner for our children. There's food at our house. But even, you know, sometimes that's a conversation of like, oh my gosh, we work full time. So do you want to just order food tonight? And, you know, and then sometimes it's a, yeah, definitely. Let's just go order some food, get the DoorDash because we're tired. And I think the emotional burden that used to come with those types of decisions, like feeling like I was making a bad decision every time I did that, that's the piece that I've tried really hard to get away from. Not that.
I feel like we all deal with that a lot, of that like self-judgment, especially when you like know so much information about like food and nutrition, mm-hmm. and you're like, I know it's like more cost effective for me to cook at home. I know that I get in higher levels of fiber if I could cook at home, and I know mm-hmm. that my diet's more diverse. But then I feel like we have to be real that life mm-hmm. is just life sometimes, and cooking is not always going to be the most feasible for everyone. Yeah. And so that's when it's like good. And I work a lot with people trying to educate on like, what's good to have on hand where we can, you know, maybe like quickly whip up something that maybe is a little more nutrient dense, but also not judge ourselves if takeout pizza is like the move for dinner. Yeah. So
I was going to say, how is that different in your house? Because obviously husband, kids, that can change the dynamic a bit. So how does that play out in your house differently or the same?
So kind of giving a little bit of backstory on like the way that I got into nutrition and my philosophy that's kind of evolved over time. So I come from a background of, I was incredibly flexible with food and had a really good relationship with food growing up. I had great parental modeling in terms of like food behaviors and stuff. I come from a very like privileged background of like, there was always home cooked dinner on the table. Yeah, we would have takeout some nights, but like I recognize that I come from like a privileged background, but I had, you know, good food modeling and good relationship with food growing up, but I am a high anxiety person, and certain life events spurred me to developing an eating disorder kind of late in high school, which in recovery from an eating disorder, it usually takes years. I mean, there's even experts that'll argue that you're never quote unquote fully recovered. I do push back against that, but that's kind of a different tangent for another day. But so had to kind of work through some of that. And basically, if you're not familiar kind of with eating disorders and stuff, you basically lose your intuition to feed yourself normally. And so we're all innately born with the ability to kind of sense our hunger and fullness. And when you go through something like an eating disorder or just fad dieting, you really get out of tune with a lot of those signals. And so it can be really hard to kind of get back into that. So it's taken me years to get back into being able to kind of tune back into my body. And that really kind of influenced kind of my trajectory on like how I, like my career trajectory, but also how my relationship with food has evolved over time. I'm a very intuitive eater. So I really won't, like, there will be some times where my husband is like hungry earlier, and I'll be like, well, you can make dinner, but I'm not like super hungry right now, and I don't have a need to like force myself to eat right now, so I'm not going to. But then there's some times where I might like tune in and just say, hey, I realize he's hungry and I'm not right now. I want to eat with him. I'm not super hungry and I'm just going to feed myself now. So I feel like my relationship with food is really flexible now in how I feed myself, but kind of with the underpinning of trying to continue to tune back into that intuition and listening to the signals that my body is putting out, rather than overriding them and, you know, pushing off hunger cues or different things like that.
And I was going to say, I feel like we both have landed in a teaching environment that sometimes can throw you off, right? If class ends at 12:15 and you are hungry, but then students have questions and now it's 12:45 and then you're like, okay, I have a 1 o'clock meeting. And then, you know, it kind of dominoes through the day, but being able to make those decisions, listen to your body, and even stop yourself or interrupt. And I feel like our society kind of really took this power away from us with the way that like work schedules are developed. And I'm not saying that we should overhaul the whole system, but I do think that there are times when it is more important to say like, I'm not going to be on time for the meeting because I didn't get a chance to feed myself yet. And some of the work culture that exists pushes back against that or is judgmental for that. And that can make you question, you know, oh, maybe I should ignore. Maybe it's not a big deal if I ignore my body for this time, but that can then, you know, build up over time. So.
And there's also a kind of healthy balance on the other side too, of like, say, you know, you teach at 11 or 11:30 or whatever, and you're like, I'm not hungry yet, but I know by the time class is done, or for anybody else that doesn't, you know, teach or anything like that, I know by the time this meeting's done or whatever, that I'm going to be hangry and ravenous, and it's not going to allow me to show up as I should in this meeting. And so maybe that's, you know, that's a cue for like intuitive eating is still very supportive of, yeah, sometimes we need to feed ourselves when we're not super hungry, because we know that those signals will continue to build and we're not going to have the opportunity to feed ourselves. And coming from someone who had, you know, a disordered past, that's been hard to tune into, but practice with that, you know, really helps strengthen some of those behaviors and like learning when to be flexible around food and learning how to be flexible around food.
Yeah. And I think that's the piece that the diet culture is missing, is the flexibility. And the, like, if you don't do it this way, then it's wrong. Versus listening and figuring out what is best for your body, personal body.
Yeah. And diet culture is so much all or nothing thinking, pulling in something I literally was just talking about with a client the other day too. It's so much black or white, all or nothing thinking, which for 99% of individuals is not appropriate and does not serve your mental health, your emotional health, your physical health, anything. And then one like really stark example that I can think of this all or nothing thinking and the way it can be really detrimental to individuals is that 75 hard. I don't know if you've seen 75 hard before. You're not as super tuned into some of the like that pop side of culture. things. but essentially my understanding, I've never done it, but basically it's 75 days in which you have a very strict regimen of all these things you have to complete each day. So I think it's like read a book, you have to do like two workouts, one of them has to be outside, you have to eat a specific diet. I think they let you choose whatever diet you want. But like, anyways, you have to do that for 75 days. And if you miss a day or if you fail one task, you have to start over. And that's just like so counterproductive, in my opinion, because, you know, when working with clients and stuff,
75 days is a long time.
It's a long time. And then also it doesn't build self-efficacy to just be like, anytime I screw up, I have to start over. And that's just not really helpful for clients. And so, I mean, throughout this podcast, we'll debunk a lot of different diets and bad regimens like that. But one kind of underpinning theme in all of fad diets is that rigidity and all or nothing thinking, that when you quote unquote fail or deviate from that plan, you start to feel really bad about yourself. And that can really prevent you from just making simple health behaviors and or health choices and things that are supportive of your health.
And you think about it, if you do think about it from a zoomed out perspective, that is why the diet culture is so successful, because it guilts the consumer into feeling like, well, you had the answer, but you failed. And so if you try harder, or if you do it different, or if you had listened, or if you'd had more self-control, or then it would have worked for you.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't think there's anything in any part of life that would exist like that, right? I mean, like, even we're thinking about teaching in a classroom, I don't expect my students to get it right off the bat the first time, right? You don't only pass a class if you get 100% of everything. Yeah. Then literally never, no student would ever matriculate on. So I think that is a really big thing that shifts between, and, you know, our culture in general does encourage it, even like school systems being set up the way that they are. Mm-hmm. But there are ways that you can educate and interact and have a relationship with yourself that has the flexibility. Mm-hmm. That isn't all or nothing. And I think that's a huge motivator of why we wanted to do this too, is because there's a lot of voices in the field that are like on either extreme, and most of everything you're going to do exists in the middle, in the gray area of like, how does this work for me? How does it fit in my life? And it translates very well into the field that I'm in, because we have a similar, like, you know, extremes with breastfeeding and formula feeding. Oh my gosh, if you're breastfeeding, you're doing all the right things. If you're formula feeding, you're evil, or vice versa. And then arguments between the two camps of people and guilting about all of those things. And in reality, for most people, it's like, this is not black and white decision. This is also not the only factor that's like, the situation with the baby is not the only factor that's going into it. And I think that could be applied to any food scenario. Like, we can explain to you the metabolism. That doesn't change that there are other factors that are going to be influencing, like you brought up, I have to go to a meeting at this time. So even though I'm not hungry right now, I'm going to be responsible. I'm going to feed myself, because otherwise I'm going to get to the other end and I'm not going to be able to show up for the people in my life the way that I want to, being that over hungry. That's the gray area, right? Like, you're not hungry yet, and you are an adult and you can make decisions for your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. There was something you brought up a little bit ago that was just talking about, like, I didn't interrupt knowing that if both of us with a little bit of a scattered brain, sometimes if we interrupt each other, we're going to go down different rabbit holes. But I did want to bring up, it was what did you say? You said something about like, you like can have all the answers, but not know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And that's like where I think it's like a super, like an argument for, again, getting back at like trusting the experts. And it's also an argument for like why we're here and doing this. You have all of the answers to any sort of health question you have at your fingertips on the web. Now, the way in which you find it and what's going to be most accurate, and if you can evaluate all of the like outside stuff, that's really to be left to like the experts and stuff like that. But a lot of people you have the information. You could find mm-hmm. it if you wanted to. But what most people really need help with in terms of like supporting nutrition and health is like developing the self-efficacy that they can feed themselves.
Yeah, and that actually brings another one good point that I really hope can get communicated through this, because we have talked a lot about, you know, the responsibility being on the consumer when there's all this information and giving some responsibility back to the healthcare provider. But I think that if you have a good healthcare provider, if you have someone that is guiding you and coming alongside you in your journey, that is not taking away from someone's ability to advocate for themselves. In fact, the goal is the opposite. You want someone to have the confidence to be able to navigate the system on their own, know what they're making, why they're making decisions for their body. And that includes like with other healthcare providers. And if you have healthcare providers that are pushing you into these like extreme areas, that you would have the confidence to listen to your body and say, no, I don't think that's really helping me. I don't think that's true for me, because one size doesn't fit all in all of these situations. If there's healthcare providers listening in this forum too, having the flexibility and confidence as a healthcare provider to know that you don't need to follow a textbook, right? If you have a solid understanding of your field, you shouldn't have to follow a textbook to know what to say next. You should be able to give flexible options to the people that you're interacting with. And if you're a general consumer, if you're running into healthcare providers that are saying, no, that's the only way, it's very likely untrue. I think that we may have lost Jesse. So I will just wrap this piece up. If you love this episode, we loved chatting with you. If you're looking for more resources, we have a new option online that is at grovenutritioncollective.com. It has handouts, it has videos, it has recipes, it has blogs. It talks about a lot of different topics like, breastfeeding, gut health, allergies, child nutrition, general well-being. So if you would love to have more information, you can go to grovenutritioncollective.com and you can join our membership. We have a free option and we have a paid option. We would love for you to just join us there if you want to continue this conversation. And Jesse's returned, so
my computer just all of a sudden was like, you don't have any internet connection, goodbye. It's like, okay, fun. We love technology. Hope and I both also teach in online programs, so we are very well versed in technology. Cooperating.
Yeah. While you left us temporarily, I was just telling them if they liked this episode, if they enjoyed the information, we have more resources at grovenutritioncollective.com. We have a free option. We have a paid option. The free option is kind of like a teaser for what's in the paid option. We're going to also have this podcast, obviously, as a free resource. So we'd love to interact with you more in those different forums.
Yeah, and we hope you learned something today, got to know us a little bit better. But until next time, stay responsibly caffeinated and reasonably skeptical of nutrition and health claims you see online. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.